This is a big moment for our podcast.
And we've got a big show to celebrate.
We've packed Inside Pop with the very, very, very best in pop culture this week to honor our debut on the Maximum Fun Network.
Special guest Mike Cicchini is here to rank the best movies of 2017 so far.
And I'll have a special summer movie edition of the Inside Pop Quiz for Amita.
Ooh, I'm already nervous. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly segment, The Big Sell.
The Maximum Fun debut of Inside Pop starts now. I am Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and we are ecstatic to debut on Max Fun.
Now, if I knew anything about being a debutante, I might feel like one right now, Amita, but I don't know.
I do, my friend. I've been practicing my curtsy. You haven't?
Secretly, but now not so secretly, yes.
All right, well, let's take a quick moment to tell our new listeners about our podcast, shall we?
Sure. Inside Pop, what are we? We are a weekly podcast where Amita and I discuss what we deeply care about in pop culture. TV, movies, music, comic books, Instagram feeds, anything that's in the popular culture that catches our ears and eyes, we tackle on this show.
Yeah, and you're like, well, I've probably heard podcasts that do a lot of this stuff. I think what makes us unique is the fact that it's us, right? We are also television producers. We kind of have an insider's perspective on the world of pop culture, being behind the scenes in television and digital content. But also, we're members of the Producers Guild, so we get an access to screenings and panels and workshops that talk all about film and television as well. So it's kind of a great combination to be a fan of pop culture, but also be inside of it sometimes, too.
And let's talk about everyone's favorite word these days, diversity. We are diverse. and actually, okay, neither of us really wear our diversity on our sleeves. So maybe I shouldn't tell you that one of us is male and one of us is female. Maybe that's something that you guys just need to figure out yourselves.
Are you saying that I have a manly voice?
Maybe I won't tell you that one of us is an Indian American and the other one is African American. Does that matter? Actually, it does matter. But you know what? You'll figure out which one of us is that also. One of us might be gay, the other is straight. One of us is married.
The other divorced and single.
Yeah. So basically, we bring our television, I'm going to call it expertise, because Lord knows I've been in television for 94 years, so I have earned the ability to say expertise. We bring our expertise in television, we bring our passion for pop culture, and we bring our love for talking to each other all into this podcast every week, and really just have a conversation with you guys about what is causing us to have major feelings.
And you'll hear all of those feelings, guys.
There's a lot
of feelings that happen on this podcast, just so you know. Be prepared, buckle up. As we said before, we are so excited and super grateful to be part of the Max Fun family. And I think we should just get this started. Let's get this special episode going. So before we get into our interview with Mike Cicchini about the best movies of 2017 so far, I believe, Mr. Johnson, you have a quiz for me.
Yes, I do. So every once in a while on our show, we have the Inside Pop Quiz. I hope everyone appreciates the clever little title because the show is Inside Pop. And guess what? It's a quiz I'm springing on Amita. So it's our Inside Pop Quiz. You'll come to know that it's something that I enjoy, springing things on my co-host, Amita.
All the time.
So we've just celebrated the 4th of July, and we are deep, deep, deep into summer movie season. So I thought I would celebrate by bringing you, Amita, the Inside Pop Quiz : Summer Movie Edition.
Oh, geez. Okay, I'm ready. Bring it.
Okay, I'm going to span the decades to quiz you on your knowledge of summer blockbusters, okay? And let's just start by saying that all of the answers, some of these questions are about box office gross and because we just celebrated the 4th of July, we're going to think about America, U.S. box office only. We're not going to talk about the global market, okay?
Oh, jeez. I got to know numbers? Oh, Lord. Okay.
Okay.
Hit me.
All right. Question number one. For so long, Steven Spielberg has ruled as director summer blockbusters. So we're going to have a little bracket game going, okay? So my first question to you is, and this question is worth 40 points.
Just so you guys all know, just like a side note, Sean loves to arbitrarily just give these things points. They could just be one each, but he likes to say like 30, 40, 20, double the points. He really takes this seriously.
I do.
Carry on.
What do I have in my hand right now?
You have a pen and you're going to write it down and tally it up at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Okay, Amita, for 40 points, which Steven Spielberg film made more money, adjusted for inflation, Jaws, released in 1975, summertime, or E.T., released in 1982? Which of these Steven Spielberg blockbuster summer movies made more money, Jaws or E.T.?
I am going to go with Jaws.
Sadly, I cannot give you 40 points. E.T., the extraterrestrial, just edged Jaws. E.T. made $1.152 billion. Jaws only $1.040 billion. Loser, Jaws. Okay, so sorry, no points for you.
Okay.
But let's do this. What made more money? Which Steven Spielberg blockbuster movie made more money? Raiders of the Lost Ark, released in 1981, or Jurassic Park, released in 1993?
Oh, I'm going Jurassic Park on this one.
40 points for Amita Patel.
Yay!
Yeah.
Dinosaurs win, always.
Dinosaurs beat archaeologists. 40 points for Amita. Okay, so one more question about numbers. We all have seen those Back to the Future movies, the original, number two, number three. Which of the three Back to the Future summer blockbusters has made the most money?
Oh, this is a tough one because I want to go with the original because the original is the best and I love it so, so much. Follow-up question, does it involve any re-release money?
No, this is just original box office, adjusted for inflation, U.S. dollars, and this is also worth 40 points, by the way.
So again, I was saying I think the original would be my choice, but because of anticipation of a sequel, and the sequel is all future, and that was super cool back then, I want to say maybe the sequel surpassed the original. I'm going to go with Back to the Future 2.
Very, very, very good reasoning.
But I'm wrong.
Which sadly did not pay off. The original, your favorite, actually made the most money.
All right, that's good. I'm happy about that, though.
Yeah. But the sequel made the second most, and then the third part made the least. So what was that telling the filmmakers? Just stop it.
Just stop it. Okay. Great, Scott. Okay.
Okay. So right now, Amita's at 40 points. We have a couple of questions left. The next question does not involve money, but it does involve numbers. So we all remember that in 2012, the summer blockbuster Battleship was released, and it kind of starred Rihanna, and she famously only had about 60 lines in the film. Amita Patel, you will get 10 points for every line of dialogue of Rihanna's that you can recite to us right now.
What kind of quiz is this? People who may be just joining us for the very first time, these questions have never been harder. He is really trying to make me look like I don't know what I'm talking about.
We're on a podcast network now. We have to prove our pop culture knowledge.
Yeah, but you could throw me a couple softballs so I sound like I know what I'm doing. I don't even know if I saw all of Battleship. So I'm just going to throw some stuff out there to hopefully keep people interested in this podcast because I'm going to be as clever as hell. Let's try. You sunk my battleship.
You know what? That is not...
Work? No?
No, but I'm giving you 20 points for both of those.
And Captain Better Have My Money?
Okay. No.
Is there just a scream? Can I get a scream? I don't want to scream on the podcast, but you know. She must have screamed in the film.
You know what? She screamed twice. So I'm giving you 20 more points for that.
Is there a curse in there? An F to the U? Sorry, Mom. Or this is some BS? No? She's a badass. I think that these are things she would say. Being on a battleship that's being taken down.
Yeah, she did want us to believe that she was a badass. No, but you know what, Amita? I'm going to give you 10 more points because you actually did not see the movie. So you deserve 10 points for having not seen Battleship. So good job. But other lines...
I lose those 10 points because I saw Suicide Squad, don't I?
Yes. No, you automatically lose the game. But she had other great lines like, Lieutenant, get up. I don't know. What? Who's in charge? What the hell is that? Sir. And, believe it or not, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Oh, that was the next thing I was going to guess. It was between Popeyes or Kentucky Fried Chicken. Wow, impressive. Rihanna, the impressive lines? I don't even know what to say to that. But good question, Sean.
Okay, final question in our Inside Pop Summer Movie Edition quiz to redeem the discussion of Battleship. The classic film from 1958, The Long Hot Summer, starred which Hollywood couple?
Yeah, you're going classics? Oh, jeez. I'm going to go with the couple that there's two couples that I'm thinking of. The one that came to my mind first is Hepburn and Tracy, but it's probably Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, or none of the above.
The Long Hot Summer from 1958 starred the beautiful two beautiful couple for words, Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward, and I believe, if my Robert Osborne stories are remembered correctly, they actually met making that movie.
Oh.
Yeah, and it was filmed on location in New Orleans. So, you know, just dropping some classic movie knowledge for the people.
Glad that you got that classic movie knowledge that you just kind of searched to find a hard question for me to not answer well.
One thing that you'll also discover about us is that we're very competitive. But Amita, I'm going to say good job because I'm tabulating the results right now.
You should see him writing stuff down, guys. It's not a joke. He is.
90 points. Amazing.
Solid B.
Thank you for playing along with the Inside Pop Quiz : Summer Movie Edition.
Not sure if I had a choice, but thank you for indulging me and all of my Rihanna quips.
Okay, so we're going to return with Den of Geeks' Mike Cicchini to discuss his top favorite films of 2017 so far, right after this.
Well, hoopity dop dop, scoopity dee dop, deepity dabity doobity hoppity hoop. Hoopity doo doo, de pappity dee dee, de doo 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 ba da. Whoopity doo doo, rabbity hey hey, hoopity ha, it's a papa doo. Baby, dooba doo doo doo, ba dee da da, de doo 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 doo, sit da.
Stop podcasting yourself. We don't even know anymore.
Find it on MaximumFun.org or wherever you download your podcasts.
So this is the first week of July, marking the beginning of the second half of 2017. 2017, the year when 6 months feels like 4 years.
So we are going to take time to take a look back at the year and discuss the best movies of 2017 so far.
Joining us now to give us his take on the best movies of 2017, so far, Mike Cicchini, editor-in-chief of Den of Geek.
Welcome, Mike.
Hey, guys. It's great to be here.
So glad for you to join us. I feel like, as someone who follows you on Twitter, I have an idea of what some of your favorite movies of the year have been so far, but I'm very excited to chat with you and to hear in-depth explanations as to your choices.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty transparent. And the fact that I'm the editor-in-chief of denofgeek.com kind of gives you an idea of where my head is at. Also, just as a little disclaimer, I have not seen as many movies as I ordinarily would this year. So there's a couple things that I know are great, like Colossal and Free Fire, that I have not seen yet.
Okay.
So, yeah. Hmm. So there's a couple notable omissions. So, but everything that, you know, has really gotten to me this year has been a genre flick, which is not really surprising, I guess. but, you know, that's just kind of where I'm at. And I expect to get caught up on my necessary movie viewing in the next couple months, too.
Have you found, this is a little bit of a tangent, but have you found that you're watching more TV than you normally do and fewer movies? Is that a case for you?
Yeah, it is. And it's not, I mean, look, I don't devour movies at the rate that some members of my staff do. I mean, you know, we have David Crowe is our lead film critic, and that dude is just amazing. You know, like, I know guys in this business where they are just at a different screening every single day. And I would love to be able to do that, but I have to run the site. And, you know, and there's so much. I mean, you know, the peak TV thing is kind of a joke at this point, but at the same time, can't really be ignored. And I'm behind on my TV as well. It took me a week to catch the finale of Better Call Saul. So
no, I'm still behind on that. So you're ahead of me there.
You got to fix that.
I'm going to. That show consistently delivers. So I'm so excited to see the last few episodes. Well, your tangent question was not the same question I had, but I thought maybe did the first half of 2017 feel a little less than in the film genre? Did you feel like there wasn't as much to choose from?
No, I really didn't. Mostly because two of my favorites came out so early in the year. I feel like, you know, January and February were so strong in terms of quality releases that, you know, did not cost a lot of money for the studio to make. You know, usually that's kind of a dumping ground for movies. And this year, two, possibly three of my favorites came out in January and February or early March or whatever it was.
So let us know, which ones are these?
Yeah, historic precedent here. Shall we be dramatic? And do you want to count down from 5 to 1? Shall we do that?
Oh, man, that makes it harder. that makes it harder. No, let's stick with the... Yeah, no.
Maybe we should go chronologically if that's easier.
Yeah, let's go roughly chronologically. So, now you just put me on the spot with one thing. did Split come out before? Yeah. So Split was a January release. Split was the new M. Night Shyamalan flick.
Right.
And did you guys see Split?
I did not, but I heard a lot about it.
Yeah, I did not see Split. And I love James McAvoy and I love Comeback Story, M. Night Shyamalan, but I did not see Split.
Yeah, it's really good. And this movie cost, you know, I mean, it's a Blumhouse production, so it didn't cost a lot of money. I think they spent like $10 million or something like that. And it is a really solid thriller. And obviously it's a showcase for James McAvoy, who is brilliant. If you can avoid spoilers at this point, please continue to do so. I think it's hit VOD by now, but it's a really solid genre flick. You know, it's not too long. It's not too flashy. There are some great surprises, and it feels like a real return to form for this guy that, you know, 15 years ago, we all thought was going to be this force in Hollywood for decades to come. And that kind of didn't happen. So I really liked it. I also really liked his last movie. Did you see The Visit?
Yes, The Visit. I saw The Visit just recently on HBO, I think. But yeah, I enjoyed The Visit.
Yeah, The Visit was fun. So I feel like he kind of has his, you know, has it back. He's found this place to work now that lets him play to his strengths. And he's always seemed like a very sincere artist and a very sincere director. But he obviously lost his way for a while. But Split, and again, there are, you know, there are spoilers out there and there are these big surprises to be had in this movie. But even without all of that, it's a unique movie, and it's a little, it's not quite a horror movie. It's not, you know, it's a little bit more than your average thriller. It has these weird supernatural elements, and it's really great. I really, really enjoyed it. And I especially like the fact that here was this movie that was made for not a lot of money. It was released at a time of the year that studios are usually putting out, you know, I mean, what else came out in January? The latest Underworld movie, you know, Resident Evil. And for something to come out in January to be this original and make the kind of money that it did, I thought was really impressive.
I definitely want to check it out for sure. And yeah, you make a very, very good point about it coming out kind of in a very slow month for film. What is next on your list?
Well, the next one is probably the best thing I've seen so far this year, and that's Get Out. You know, and Get Out is another one that I had no idea what I was getting into. You know, that was a February release. Again, you know, last year Deadpool made all that money in February, right? But Deadpool is Deadpool. For a movie like Get Out, you know, that was really something. And it was funny, I was at a press screening for that, and it just felt like, you know, the lights came back on and everybody was just like, what did we just watch? That was amazing. And it's rare that you kind of get that vibe where even a room full of, you know, pretty much critics,
right,
kind of know that there was just a moment. Did you see Get Out?
Yes.
Yeah, I saw it and I loved it. And I envy that experience of seeing it at a press screening before all of the hype. But I'll say that the thing that I remember about, that I'll always remember about Get Out, is that I saw the first time I saw a trailer for Get Out, or it was a commercial during, I think it might have been the BET Awards or the Soul Train Awards, some award show on a black cable network. And Twitter exploded. I think it was the first time anyone had almost heard of this film. And the great thing is that film didn't disappoint. It had an amazing trailer, and the film definitely made good on the promise of that trailer.
100%. Yeah, it was incredible. I seriously still think about moments in that film. It was one of those films that, like, you have to talk about no matter what. There's something to talk about in this film. And there's things that I, like, found out after the fact, just, you know, kind of different foreshadowing or just different type of, you know, metaphors or whatever else that, you know, there's just so much in this film. And I really, really enjoyed it. It was such a good film. Another Blumhouse production too, right?
Yeah, that's true. That is another Blumhouse thing. And, you know, and it's like, oh, it's, you know, just Jordan Peele's new movie. Like, that, what a nice, you know, what a nice thing. And then you just go in there and have your, you know, have your head blown off by this incredibly powerful movie, where just every performance was right on the money. I was really, really happy with that. And it was just another one of those pleasant surprises, and one of the, you know, the smartest genre movies I've seen in a long time.
And I think the interesting thing is that, you know, there's almost any film, there's always a range of reviews or response. This film, and Amita, I will have to call you out, but except for Amita Patel, I have heard nothing but unanimous ecstatic praise. Amita, you will recall you did not love this movie.
I had some critiques of it. I did.
But I think that, like, I wonder, what do you guys think? Is this a film, and not that it's all about the Oscars, but is this a film that could somehow be remembered, a genre horror film that could somehow be remembered during award season?
There has been some talk about that. And I think that would be something. You know, the Academy, I know they tend to be resistant to, giving genre movies love. But, you know, is it worthy of consideration? I guess. But again, you guys can tell already from the kinds of movies that we're talking about so far and the kinds of movies that we're going to talk about, you know, I'm not really the prestige movie guy, so I'm not the best person to, you know, it's like, what do you mean Gareth Edwards' Godzilla from 2014 wasn't considered for...
There's always the Mad Max Fury Road argument, though.
That's true. And that actually did get some love. I mean, that was up for a number of awards. So,
yeah, it came out, I think, in like April or May.
Yeah, and look, I'm not somebody that feels the need, you know, that everything I love needs to be validated by, you know, by major award ceremonies, you know, right. I mean, like, and I, nor do I dismiss them, you know, it's not a situation like that either. So, you know, could Get Out be talked about as we lead into the Oscars next year? I mean, I hope so, but there's a lot of movies that are going to come out between now and then.
Yeah,
that is true. Speaking of that, let's hear your next choice. Are we still in the month of February?
No, now we are in March. And now this is when I start to kind of play into what you expect a little bit more, I guess. And it's Logan.
I knew this would be on your list.
Yeah, Logan was really special. I can almost excuse this because I don't even consider Logan a superhero movie. Logan feels more like a Western than a superhero movie. I think it's unquestionably the best thing that's ever come out of the X-Men franchise. I think it was a perfect send-off for Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart. I just could not imagine a smarter way to tell that kind of story, to work with all of the franchise baggage that has come before it. You know, I don't think I've ever seen anything that genuinely ballsy with, you know, with a comic book property, with a superhero property, since Christopher Nolan was doing Batman movies. You know, it was risky. The R rating was more than an excuse to let Patrick Stewart drop F-bombs. It was about more than that. It was more than the violence. You know, the political parallels, I thought, were particularly timely. It was a special movie that could not have been done with anybody other than Jackman and Stewart. That could not have been done if, you know, in a way, even the bad stuff that has come before in the X-Men franchise contributed to the greatness of this movie. You know, it's, I don't know. I seriously don't know when we're going to see an opportunity for something like that again. You know, maybe if Marvel decides to give Robert Downey Jr. a big send off when he decides to retire as Tony Stark or something, but
that could be possible,
you know, but I think this is something that, as a fan, as somebody who does not think there are too many superhero movies, who wants more of them, who wants this genre to thrive, the only way that's going to happen is if you let directors like James Mangold take exactly these kinds of chances to make these movies in a way that are not, you know, that are not intended to sell t-shirts or action figures, that are not worried about hitting the widest possible audience at all times. You know, they let this guy make his movie, and you don't get that a lot. You know, I want to see that in the Star Wars franchise in a few years. You know, if Hollywood is going to keep doing this stuff, and they are, then eventually, in order for it to flourish, they have to be able to disguise these movies as other things. And Logan is a perfect example of that.
I say amen to everything you just said. It is, I think it's maybe my favorite film of the year so far, for all the reasons that you said. And like, I feel like at the heart of it was obviously a really great script and a great director. But just those two actors being allowed to do what they did, unbeatable. And I think there should be a Professor X from Logan action figure, because kids need to know that aging sucks sometimes. And I think that action figure could teach them that lesson. But, oh my gosh. Yeah. Amen to everything that you said. Such a great movie. And I have a question for you. Did you see, Mike, Logan Noir?
No, I didn't. I missed the screening in New York. And I haven't checked it out on the Blu-ray yet. Did you see it?
No, I tried to, and it sold out quickly. And just for the listeners, there were a number of theaters. I think it was one night only. There was a black and white version of Logan, a version that Mangold, I believe, oversaw. And I saw images from it online, and just like the film was made to be seen in black and white. It seemed that it felt that way to me.
Yeah. I can't remember where I read it, but he was talking about what it took to create that black and white version of the movie. So a movie that was shot in color, for them to then be able to make it look like it belonged in black and white is a real accomplishment. So no, they let this guy make his movie, and that was just another perfect example.
Yeah. And you said it's on the Blu-ray?
Yeah, I believe so.
Okay. Cool. Good reason to buy that Blu-ray, Sean David Johnson. Early yeah. Christmas present for you. You're welcome.
Yeah, that is I'm even surprised that I don't own a Blu-ray, but that's something that will be rectified in the second half of 2017.
Lucky for you, I do. Come on over and we'll watch Logan Noir.
Oh, I'll see you there. So what else is on your list, Mike?
You know, I gotta talk about Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember you were excited last year.
That's right.
I'm so proud. I don't know why I'm proud. I have nothing to do with this film, but I'm just proud.
You're a woman, and that's
I'm a
what
woman.
You have to
yeah,
do with this
that's
film.
Basically it. Yeah. What did you think of it?
I loved it, and personally, I was happy that it surpassed my expectations. But what really struck me about it was, again, like Logan, it took a lot of chances. I thought that World War I setting was something kind of special. That's not. That was a really smart way to go. The cast was tremendous. I really don't know if I've ever enjoyed Chris Pine quite as much as I did in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, there was a real heart to it that is missing, you know, that has certainly been missing, unfortunately, from a lot of the recent DC superhero movies. But there was a warmth and heart to it that I think even, you know, that you don't even usually get in the Marvel superhero movies, which are known for having a lighter touch and a lot more humor and things like that. Mm-hmm. But there was a real sincerity to Wonder Woman. And to me, that is really, really important when you're dealing with DC superheroes, because, you know, as a huge Superman fan, the one thing that has really been missing from the recent Superman movies is that sincerity, is that willingness to showcase the importance of doing the right thing,
mm-hmm.
solely for the sake of doing the right thing. And when, you know, and when Wonder Woman is just shaking hands with the villagers after that incredible no man's land mm-hmm. scene. I mean, that, first of all, that no man's land scene goes down in history as one of the greatest superhero movie scenes of all time. It's an instant classic. It's Christopher Reeve catching the helicopter in Superman the movie in 1978. You know, it's one of those moments. And to follow that up, you know, it's a great action sequence. It's beautifully photographed. Gal Gadot is tremendous in it. The score, the soundtrack was a real knockout, and mm-hmm. particularly that track. So to go from that moment directly into this bit where then, you know, she's kind of dealing with the human element and shaking hands with these villagers and these refugees and everything else, that really got to me. Like that was really meaningful. And I thought that was a masterful piece of directing as well. And Gal Gadot, couldn't have been better. I mean, she brought this, like, she really, look, I don't know what her range as an actress is. I don't know anything about that, but for this role, and I got a good vibe from her in Batman v Superman, but there wasn't enough to really tell. The heart and the sincerity that she brought to this was so convincing. It's impossible to imagine anybody else in that role now. So yeah, I was really moved by Wonder Woman, and I hope it points the way for what they're going to do with these DC superhero movies now.
I hope so too.
Prayers up, because we all win if the DC movies up their game a bit.
Well, I think the box office speaks for itself, and everybody's looking at this film and all the incredible reviews, so I'm pretty sure DC's taking notes and applying it across the board.
Well, shout out to Patty Jenkins, because the pressure was on big time, and she surpassed all expectations. She's amazing. I read this interview with her, or actually I heard an interview with her on another podcast, and she just put so much thought into it. She talked about how she, you know, used the paintings of John Singer Sargent as inspiration for the visual look of the movie, and she talked about why she chose World War One instead of World War Two. Just so thoughtful and so confident in what she executed. So amazing.
Yeah, there was a lot going on here, and it makes me really happy to see it having the success that it is.
Likewise.
Yeah. And now Batgirl is, it was always the most anticipated film for me, but now even more anticipated, helmed by Joss Whedon. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it sounds like they might try and move fast on that, which is cool.
Oh, great. Oh, that's good news.
I mean, look, I would much rather see that than another Batman movie.
Yeah, me too.
I think we're at that point.
Definitely, yes. if my math is correct, which it's usually not, we have one more slot on your list.
Okay.
We're very excited to hear what that is.
Well, that depends. Are we breaking rules tonight, or are we not breaking rules tonight?
I'm feeling like some rules should be broken. What do you think, Amita?
I like breaking rules, but really think long and hard about just what you might be ruling out to break this rule.
No, I got to do it.
Okay.
I got to do it. If you guys are cool with it, I got to do it. Because you are literally the first people that I get to talk about this movie with. I sent one tweet out when I walked out of the screening before. So like you guys are like I've been bursting to talk about this movie.
We love an exclusive. Yay!
Spider-Man Homecoming is wonderful. Spider-Man Homecoming is it is the Spider-Man movie that I have wanted my entire life.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it is a riot. It is, the jokes land. Michael Keaton is tremendous. It's really, really good, and it's going to make all the money in July.
Wow.
So Mike is just hours away from walking out of the theater. So we are catching him fresh post afterglow Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah. Now I do have to warn you, there is something that we have kind of identified at Den of Geek and within, you know, other writers that we talk to. There is kind of like this Marvel effect. Like any Marvel Studios movie that you see, and really this was a co-production of Sony and Marvel Studios, but anytime you go see a Marvel Studios movie, and let me know if you guys have noticed this too, doesn't matter what it is, you go see it in a crowded theater, you have the best time, you walk out feeling like, oh my God, that was so amazing. And then like over time, maybe you start thinking, well, you know what? I don't really even remember that much about this movie. You know, like I walked out of Thor 2 being like, oh my God, that was so amazing. even that, you know, so is there might be some of that at play here.
Okay. So how about we fast forward and you pretend you're in August? How do you feel about Spider-Man Homecoming now?
I will probably still consider it my favorite Spider-Man movie, solely on the basis of several of the performances. The humor is really, really solid. It's certainly the funniest Spider-Man movie. It's certainly the one that kind of gets that element of the character the best. And there's some really great music cues that people are going to pop for.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. It's not a perfect movie, but this is kind of what I've wanted for a long time. It has this real New York vibe to it. It's genuinely funny. The high school stuff is really great. They're not constantly trying to set you up for these big moments from the comics. You know, they really just let Peter's high school supporting cast establish themselves. And this young cast is great.
Wow. I think for the ads, Mike Cicchini of denofgeek.com saying, this is the Spider-Man movie I've waited for all of my life. That's what you want on that movie
that's
poster.
That's right.
Yeah, I try not to say things okay. for those things. You know what I mean? But this is, you know, when you kind of sit around and you're deconstructing these five other Spider-Man movies and you talk about what's good and what's bad, for me, the thing that always comes up is, where's the humor? You know, where's that kind of like slapstick element to Spider-Man? You know, how come everybody is 30 years old?
Right.
So to have this movie where the cast really feels like they're in high school and all of the high school stuff feels like this high school comedy is really fresh and different. This could have really collapsed under its own weight, and it never does. It never gets too big for itself, which I think is a problem with a lot of other Spider-Man movies as well, where you kind of forget that he's really just kind of this dopey kid in Queens. This movie never forgets that. And that was really, really appealing to me.
And Tom Holland, I'm assuming you love more than the other two Spider-Men at this point.
He's great. And I have nothing... You know, I mean, like Tobey Maguire was great, and I really liked Andrew Garfield. Tom Holland is the total package.
Ah, I love it.
Put that on the poster too.
I am jonesing.
No, he's legit.
And here's my obvious question of the night: do we need to stay and watch the credits? Is there a little Marvel bonus thing happening?
Yeah there's two.
Okay. Oh, two of them.
There's
okay,
two.
That's good to know.
You got
to
stay all the
know.
Way. Okay. It's great. No, it's really, really fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the exclusive, Mike.
if only this were a visual medium, because the smile on Mike's face right now is yeah. large and big. Wide. He is a very happy man right now.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You guys, and you know, there's other great stuff coming out in July. Valerian looks great. I haven't seen that yet. I have not seen War for the Planet of the Apes, but I have been reliably told by a lot of people that is... probably the smartest, best blockbuster of the year.
They do such a good job with that series. I can't wait for that.
Yeah. So, but Spider-Man is gonna at least own it until Planet of the Apes comes out.
Yeah. And then you have Dunkirk and you have Atomic Blonde and, you know, it's one after the next. The summer is bringing it.
Yeah, this is a good summer.
It is a good summer.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I know, like, it's all about Spider-Man now in my brain right now, but I thank you for joining us to give us your top five favorite movies of the year so far. I'm definitely going to get in front of my TV and watch Split. I'm definitely going to go to the movie theater and see Spider-Man, and then all of your other choices in between. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts about these films.
Guys, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again, Mike.
Yeah, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Definitely.
Thanks so much.
A huge thank you again to Mike Cicchini from denofgeek.com for joining us for our best of 2017 so far and for giving us his surprise immediate reaction to Spider-Man Homecoming. What a nice little bonus.
You heard it here first. Okay, you can follow Mike on Twitter at WayOutStuff, and you can follow Den of Geek at DenofGeekUS and denofgeek.com.
We'll be right back with the big sell after this quick message.
Gates McFadden, Marina Sirtis,
Larissa Inbatur,
LeVar Burton, Patrick Stewart look like movie stars.
Yeah.
Everybody else is like, you should just be on TV.
Sort of like when podcasters do this live.
Yeah.
Ben, the Greatest Generation is going back out on tour.
We're taking a new show out on tour about Star Trek First Contact. And whether or not you're a Star Trek fan, I think you're going to love this live show.
You come to our live show, you get Star Trek jokes. You get fart jokes. The whole gamut.
So come on out. It's bit.ly/ggtour2017. That's bit.ly/ggtour2017.
Welcome back to Inside Pop, and we are now at our last segment, and it's our weekly segment, The Big Sell. The Big Sell is one of our favorite segments in which Amit and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture that we love to the other. I kind of like to think of it as a pop culture Jedi mind trick, where I try to get Amita to love everything that I'm loving and vice versa. So, after we big sell, we return and hear the rating and review the next week. So last week, I big sold a documentary about one of our favorite singers, Miguel, journeying in Mexico with his father and his brother, singing songs, looking hot along the way.
There's so much more than just singing songs and looking hot. So,
is there? First,
yes, there is. I have to thank you for this big sell. It's called Earthworks. It's on Viceland. It's on Viceland on demand if people who still have cable or can find it online. It is really great. It reminded me of a combination of a couple shows because it takes an artist out of their element and kind of gives them their roots in a way and still features some of their artistry. So I love that Miguel went back to his homeland of Mexico with his father and his brother. So that was super familial. He got to meet some of his family, spent time with them. So it was really cool to see that aspect of him personally. And then within the episode, they did a really great job of talking about environmental issues that have been affecting Mexico and how, you know, avocado farming and, you know, the decline of the monarch butterfly and, you know, farming corn. Like, there's so much that I learned in this, aside from learning about Miguel, which I thought was really great. And it didn't feel forced. It just felt pretty natural to who he was. And the music was just kind of a cherry on top. You know, he got to sing with his father and his brother, which was super touching. And at the very end, they kind of did this really incredible, almost made it feel like a music video of one of your favorite songs and my favorite songs, because all of my Miguel songs are my favorite, of Waves, which is such a beautiful rendition acoustically in the middle of this valley, which seemed completely empty. And it was just him and his dad and his brother. And I thought that was really, really beautiful.
Yeah. And I think that, tell me what you think, but you don't actually have to be a fan of Miguel's. Well, let me rephrase that. You do have to be a fan of Miguel's, but you don't have to be a fan of Miguel's to enjoy this documentary, because yeah. I think, as you said, it covers so many topics and it's beautifully shot. And it's, I feel like one of those people who stand on the street in New York City and harass you, like, do you have time for environmental causes? Do you love gay rights? You know, and it's like, but I don't, what's my answer? Yes, but no, get away from me. Anyway, if you love the environment or good music or depictions of family coming together, you have to love this documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of Years of Living Dangerously, because that show, if you've listened to us, we've featured it on the podcast in the past and spoke to one of the co-creators of the show. And that show takes artists and celebrities into different areas of the world to talk about climate change. And this one, I think, is a little bit more like artistic than that. And there's a little more personal aspect to it, which I think really, really is more powerful in some ways, because I have such a love for Miguel. So I feel like I was a little more connected to this one. And I really respect what they're doing with the series. I'm going to definitely check out some more.
Yeah, and we were talking a little bit earlier in the show about identity and kind of joking around about how, right, we do have kind of together represent a lot of diversity, right? And but I'm thinking about how Miguel does have this interesting identity as an R&B singer who's half Black, half Mexican, and the Mexican side you don't see as much. And it was really cool seeing him explore this, you know, his Mexican heritage in this as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Thank you so much for that big sell. I am going to try to restrain myself and not just rate this based on the fact that Miguel is in it. I'm going to be objective and rate it as a show and a production.
You're so objective. What a professional.
And I'm going to give it 3.5 stars for that.
Well done. Well done. 3.5 out of 4 stars, right?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Good. Well, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I had a feeling you would, because I feel like I know you a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah. So I'm excited to hear what you have to big sell to me this week.
Well, I have another singer songwriter to share with you. And for those of you who don't know the big sell, this happens somewhat often on this podcast, but it's been extremely successful for most parts. I would say we have like an 85 to 90% success rate with the musicians that we have sold each other.
Yeah. Can I just say that the big sell is, there are so many artists over the past year and a half as we've produced this podcast and we've produced the big sell. There are so many artists. I'm so thankful that you've brought into my life through the big sell. Just people I
likewise.
Listen to over and 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 over again.
Yes, likewise.
Now I want to sing. Here's to a good goodbye.
Oh, Leanne.
Leanne LaHavis. I would have never heard of, or it would have been a while before I heard of her. Without your big sell, love her so much.
Yeah, Sampha. I wouldn't have known of Sampha without your big sell.
Hooray for the big sell. So,
yay.
So do you have a Sampha Leanne LaHavis level big sell for me this week?
Oh, geez. Here we go. Challenging me, putting me on the spot, Mr. Johnson. Okay. So I happened to be in Denver for a long weekend recently with some really cool, great, fun people. Some friends of mine who I didn't know very well, but I think that we've all bonded really well. And we just had a really great time. Kind of went to Red Rocks, which was such a great mecca for music, which I didn't realize. It's been around for almost a century and such an iconic artists play there. And the people that I was with were all very musical too. So like they all kind of love music in their own way. And one car ride with one of my friend's friends who lives in Denver, she started playing the song and me and my friend kind of like flipped out about it. And I was like, I have to make this one of my big sells. The song that she played, which I am selling to you right now, is called Wild Horses. And it's by an artist called Bishop Briggs. And it was, I don't know what it is about it. We put it on repeat. We were just driving from one house to the next and we just put it on repeat because we really, really enjoyed the vibe and sound of this artist and song. So Wild Horses by Bishop Briggs for you.
Oh, very interested. I wonder if there's enough substance for us to one day do a segment on two songs we like with the same title. Because there's a U2 song called Wild Horses.
There is.
I mean, I think it's officially called Who's Gonna Ride Your Wild Horses. So if I like this big sell, that will be two songs called Wild Horses that I like. It's like I like Madonna's Who's That Girl and I like Eurythmics' Who's That Girl. Do you have an example of that?
This is my turn to bring up a song that I'm trying to vamp right now. Who
is it? What's the singer? He was part of the boys group, and he always poses with his shirt off. One of the Jonas Brothers.
Nick Jonas.
What was his last song?
Closer.
No. It was also the title Bacon. Of a Prince song. Maybe it was Joe Jonas.
No, you were talking about Harry Styles' Sign of the Times and Prince's Sign of the Times.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll go with that. There is Harry Styles' Sign of the Times and Prince's Sign of the Times.
So maybe it's a thing. We'll see. But thank you for your big sell of Wild Horses by Bishop. I look forward to listening to it. Amita, we're done.
Amazing. We made it.
We made it. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to our debut episode on Maximum Fun. For our longtime listeners, thanks for joining us again. As you can hear, it's the same podcast you've always been listening to and hopefully enjoying. And for people checking us out, thanks so much for checking us out. We hope you liked what you heard. Please let us know. You can tweet us at Pop Insiders, and you can also follow us on Instagram at the same handle, at Pop Insiders.
And of course, if you haven't heard it enough, you can now find us at MaximumFun.org, along with a number of really awesome podcasts dedicated to comedy and culture.
And if you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure to give us a rating and a review. It helps other people find us. And you can also go to our official website, InsidePopPodcast.com, to listen to older episodes, to check out bonus content, and also to subscribe.
That's it for now. Have an amazing week, y'all.
Bye, everyone.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.